Merlin, you know, one of the things you've said when you talk about presentations that has always reverberated with me is the willingness to dump your slides. And this seems kind of funny in this book where I spend so much time teaching people how to make great slides. But aren't there times when it makes sense to dump your slides?
I think so, or I guess I hope so. You know, in trying to get better at speaking, a big part of what I tried to do was get better at making better presentations, better slideshows. But, you know, even think about those terms. I imagine you're addressing this in the book, but isn't it funny that we tend, when we talk about going somewhere, traveling to do a presentation to people, we talk about our slideshow or we talk about our deck. And it's amazing how much that culture has gotten to where the slideshow itself feels like the main event. And we're, you know, if you're not real careful about that, it can sort of feel like you're mostly there to just make the slides move. So, I wanted to get great at doing slides, but also the time when I was doing this is, I don't know if this is useful to your audience, but at the time when I was starting to do a lot of speaking, Macs were still not as popular as they are now. So there were times when I would show up somewhere and my computer wouldn't work right. They didn't have the right connectors, or I didn't have the right connectors. But it always felt like there were all of these things that could go wrong. Maybe the aspect ratio was wrong. They couldn't change it. You know, who knows? Could have been my fault. But the point is, when I would try to tough it out and still go through that when the tech was not working the way I expected, I felt extremely distracted. So I have to imagine the audience felt very distracted. I was very self-conscious. If the text looked weird or was cut off, like that's all I can notice. And so I imagine that's all the audience can notice. So my only takeaway is, I guess I feel like as I did that more and more, and even as Macs got more, you know, people got more friendly toward Macs, I still have this kind of hair trigger where if I have any sense that something might go wrong from a technical standpoint, if it's not the room that I expected even, I'm very quick to say, I'm going to say wing it, but I will do it without the slides. And it becomes a different kind of presentation. But for myself, I would much rather do it that way than feel like I'm presenting. Now I'm trying to mold my whole presentation to fit this broken slide deck. So, you know, yeah, you're right. I've certainly done it more times than many of my hosts would like. But yeah, I'll throw out my slides in a heartbeat.
Well, I think that what I hear from you, though, is one of the important themes of the book is, you know, the slides are not the discussion. The slides are there to support the speaker. And the primary, the most important thing in that room should be you, the speaker. And if you're going to have some problem with your slides that's going to distract you, then there is no value to those slides. I mean, you should just dump it. I told in the book the story about once where I showed up in the third slide, the bulb popped. And it was a very detailed technical talk. And so I said, you know, that's fine. Turn it off. In fact, I heard little Merlin in my head saying, you can do this. And the talk changed, but it was very good. And people were focused on me. And I really think that is something that every good speaker needs to be willing to, you know, do.
Well, absolutely. That's a great story. I think a couple ways I look at it, I think similarly to the way you do. First of all, you know, it would be nice to think that I'm the main reason that people are there or what I have to say is the main reason. I think the really important thing in that room is what's happening inside the minds of the audience and having a story that you want to tell them that gives them a reason to understand why you're there. That starts with things like credibility or maybe being entertaining. But I think the most important thing in the room is that in some ways is that connection with the audience. And that you're not going to connect with every member of the audience, but you know, you want them to be pulling for you and you want to be presenting them with something that makes them feel like their time is being well used. And maybe you're giving them, you know, a lot of what I try to do is not that insightful, but it's a reframe on the way you think about stuff. So maybe it's just the nature of what I do is more conducive, but, oh my God, you want to tell horror stories. There was one time when I went to this conference and I try to do good stuff with, you know, graphics and, you know, cool dissolves that aren't too cheesy, but lots of stuff that's where it's very important that the audience not even notice they're watching a good slideshow. But, you know, I'm very subtle about you don't notice me hitting the button. It's very cool. I can time it so as this last word is coming out of my mouth, the next slide comes up. If I'm doing slides, I want them to be really, really good. But in this case, they said, oh, we're trying something new this year. I hope you don't mind a war story. We're trying something new this year. So you go up there and we're going to give you this. And I go, what is this? This is not a remote. And they go, no. Now, what you got to do is you got to go to your Mac. I'll put all of that as a PDF. We're going to run that from a PC down in the basement. And each time you want to go to the next slide, you hit this button. And that'll tell the guy down in the basement to go to the next slide.
Now, I'm not sure if you caught it because I hit the cough button, but I actually snorted when you said that.
Well, are you, so this, so I went the night before, you know, I went to go press the flesh and meet people, go to a bar and visit with everybody. So how would you feel in my position the night before? Not only the Mac thing's not going to work, nobody's going to have their own computer. So what does that mean? It means I now have no keynote program, right? Yeah. So that's going to mean no transitions. It means no presenter notes. And on top of it all, I'm going to hit some kind of a Rube Goldberg button to tell somebody in another room. And
they have a telegraph machine in the basement.
Yeah, precisely. Beep, 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 beep. And I felt like a deer in the headlights. And I was like, I have to just say, that's very novel and sounds efficient. There is absolutely no way that I'm going to do that.
I have this vision of a guy in a basement yelling down the hallway, "Hey, Joe, Merlin wants the next slide."
Oh, you don't even want to know, because I had said, I said, that's actually like one of the worst ideas I've ever heard. And I didn't find out until like an hour later that I had been talking to the guy whose idea it was. And so that was pretty embarrassing, but that to me was a chance to woodshed. I mean, I had ADD, and so I sometimes really warm to the idea of an emergency. And that means I went and I grabbed that stack of index cards that I always have with me and just started rethinking everything I wanted to say. And then, you know what I did? I started thinking more about what I could do on stage. It made me think of like Penn and Teller. And like, you don't need to watch a movie when you're seeing Penn and Teller perform, because you're watching what's the magic trick going to be. And so I started introducing things based on index cards, because I had those with me. And I was able to do things like talk about scarcity and plenitude by throwing large volumes of index cards. So I don't know if it was the best presentation I ever did, but I know that I was very much in the room. And so the other side of this, David, that's really important, and I know you know this, think about that bulb popping, is that, you know, a lot of times when you're starting out doing presentations, you're really relying on the slides. And I'm sure somewhere in your very first chapter, you're going to talk about how it's death to read off of your own slides, to turn over this way and be able to read off your own slide. You know, I think honestly, most people have slides because they think people want slides, but because they need slides to know what it is that they're going to say. So I guess what I would say to anybody, whether you're starting out, intermediate, advanced, if you're advanced, you know this. But what I would say is, remember, it's sort of along the lines of what Gar Reynolds talks about in his book, Presentation Zen. Remember, you're putting on a show up there. This is a piece of media you're using in that show. But remember, you have no idea. They might change what room you're in. Your computer might get lost. So there's all kinds of stuff you can do. You know, rehearse with the slides. Rehearse without the slides. Make a PDF backup copy on a thumb drive. Email a copy to the people before. You know, I think there are so many reasons to think about that flexibility in how you perform. It isn't just about being a diva and throwing your slides away. It's about knowing the most important thing is that audience gets something out of it, and that you have to react, sometimes in real time, to figure out how to do that in the best way possible.
One of the points I make in the book is, when you don't have the screen turned on, because the screen gives the audience an excuse to not look at you. And I always felt that a personal connection with the audience is really critical. And to the extent that sometimes I have a remote for my slideshows where I can push a little button and the screen just goes dark, and maybe some portion of my talk, there will be no slides.
Oh, so. I think that's a brilliant idea. And it also breaks up the monotony of thinking. I think there's a lot of folks out there. Let me put it this way, if I could be candid. I've been to talks where I felt like somebody wrote a 3-to-5-page essay that wasn't very interesting and then broke it up into paragraphs or half paragraphs, often a paragraph, and then basically put that amount of information on a slide and considered it a talk. I really feel like sometimes that's how some people operate. They think in that linear way of like, I need to come up with this outline, put it up there, and then just read it in order and it'll be fine. And the thing is, your audience is going to go to sleep. That's really, really dull. I like your blacking out idea. You know, another thing I do is, if you have a structure to your slides, if you've got, you know, like in a classic sort of Aristotelian model of like the three big points you want to make, like, don't be afraid to have a slide that I have slides I use 5 times to remind you these are the 3 points. And yeah, you can be cool about that and show, well, now we're on point 2 of 3. But just remember that in telling the story, you've got the big punch and then like 3 things or however many things you're going to do to amplify that or prove it or demonstrate it. And you know, you know what I mean, though? Don't be afraid to tell people, you know, here's what we're going to talk about. Here's what I'm talking about now. And that'll make them feel smart and it'll make you feel confident, because now they never lose track of where we are in this story. You know, one of the frustrations to me of reading an iBook sometimes, honestly, is that I don't have the heft and the depth, so I don't really know like how far in the book I am. That there's just that number at the bottom, and I think in a presentation, it's nice for people to know. Well, we just finished number 2 of 3, so we're moving toward the home stretch. But yeah, the blackout trick is great. Anything that kind of tells the audience that you're thinking on their behalf, you need to put yourself in that audience and be watching your presentation and think how you would feel about it. You know, how do you make that connection with people? And then how do you have your performance reflect all the things that you'd like them to start thinking about?
It's funny. I've done several interviews for this book, and every person I talk to is, number one, an amazing presenter, and number two, comes back to this idea that you need to demonstrate to the audience how serious you took this in advance and that you planned it out and you brought them something to make it easier for them to improve their lives or answer their questions or whatever it is that they're looking for. And that is just the running theme, I think, of this entire book, is you need to be prepared and you need to demonstrate that you were prepared.
I think that's a good way to put it. I don't know if you mentioned it in the book, but there's that book, Beyond Bullet Points, that was really useful to me in my early days of doing talks. And the thrust of that book, in some ways, that was so instrumental in the way I think about talks now, is remember that you've got to put the audience in the role of the hero, right? You've got to make them the protagonist of the story and set this, you know, you don't have to do this overtly, but whatever you're there to talk about, everybody in the audience, at some point of their brain, they're going to be evaluating you and thinking about, why am I here? And do I trust what this person says? And one of the best ways to do that is to demonstrate you've already thought about that, right? To your point. So here's the story I'm telling. Here's what's going on with you guys. Here's what's happening with this environment. And here's some ways that could be threatening or challenging. Here's how you can deal with that. However you want to do that. But then, you know, like I say, just remember that that's the story that you're telling. Would you want to listen to that? Would you have credibility listening to that? And then just remember to keep checking in and making that connection and not just going to autopilot because nobody's booed yet.
Said only as you can, Merlin. Thank you so much. One last David. Question. Have you ever planned to not give a presentation? I'm sorry. Have you ever planned not to give slides?
I did, and it was a disaster. One of the earliest talks that I did in front of people, so embarrassing. Danny O'Brien and I, when we were first talking about doing this life hack stuff and writing a book about life hacks, we did a talk at, I think it was at the O'Reilly Emerging Technology Conference, which is a pretty, you know, that's a pretty big deal. It's a pretty, you know, pretty high expectations from the audience. And Danny and I were like, two chickens with their heads cut off, even in the best of situations. And together we're 10 times worse. And we got up there without slides and sat at a table. And it was like Nuremberg. I mean, people, it went terribly. But you know what? The failure was not that we didn't have slides. It's just that we had not organized it well. The slides are a MacGuffin because the slides make you have to be organized, right? It ends up making
you...
Well,
in theory, they do.
in theory, they do. But, you know, there's nothing sadder than somebody who's, you know, there probably are sadder things, but it's always painful to watch somebody who kind of needs the slides to remember what it is that they're saying next. So, I mean, one of my tips I always give, this sounds so cheesy, but I really rely so heavily on the presenter notes in Keynote, where you had a second screen that's just for you, the speaker. And one trick I always do is in the giant size, huge font speaker notes, I always have the first sentence of what I'm going to be saying when the next slide starts, or the sentence that I'll be ending as the next slide starts. That sounds so silly, but when you're up on stage and you're panicky and you had too much coffee and you know all I need to do is get through this, and when I get to the end, this is the next sentence or the next point that has to come out of my mouth. If I see just the first couple letters of that, you feel so much relief because you can start speaking and saying the thing that click goes to the next slide. And all of a sudden, you seem like the greatest presenter in the world. And you haven't done anything all that different. All you did was give yourself a cue to remember what's next. Now you don't have to read your own slides anymore. And the audience has so much more credibility in what you have to say because you've demonstrated that you thought this through.
That's interesting. I'm a little different. I script out the opening probably 30 seconds and probably closing 30 seconds. And I wrote about this in the book because to me, that's the worst time. When I stand up and I immediately start talking, that's when I'm either going to, as I used the analogy in the book, I'm either going to blast into space or I'm going to blow up on the launch pad. And I memorize that. And sometimes I stand up and I feel good and I don't need it memorized. And sometimes I don't. And I definitely need to have it in my head. After that, getting the transitions between the slides, I do fine. But that was a really good tip. So
it's a very similar, definitely a very similar idea. I mean, the thing I've really come around to over the years, this is the last thing, I won't rant all day, but something I've started to call the nod along. And I try to always gather a little bit of intelligence, not just from my host, who I might have talked with through email, but I try to get there early. Like maybe a day before, go, you know, maybe have dinner with people, but start finding out in the same way that if you were a bad stand-up comic and at a plumber's convention, you'd want to learn which plumbers to mention, you know, in your talk. But I think it really helps so much to look what kind of cars are in the parking lot, what magazines are in the waiting room, whatever intelligence you can glean about that company. If you notice that it was incredibly confusing to park, that sounds so silly, but you know what? It's probably incredibly confusing for everybody else in that company to park. Small detail, right? Well, were the hallways really curvy? Was there a ridiculous amount of security? Was the coffee terrible? Notice something that really made an impression on you and ask yourself if that might make an impression, might have made an impression on them too. And then if you're canny about that, take 5 or 10 of those ideas and try to make that the basis for a nod along. And the nod along is where you tell some kind of a story that instantly connects you with the audience and shows you that we're in the room together. We've already had the same experience, and then you get people laughing, and that 30 seconds goes so much easier. You don't just want to have a canned joke about Obama. Put yourself in that room. Now we're all in this room together, and we know we can talk to each other because we've all had the same bad coffee and the same horrible parking.
Great, great tips, Merlin. Well, thanks a lot, Merlin, man. Everybody, I recommend you click the link in the book and go check out all the great stuff Merlin does. He's a podcaster, speaker, writer, and just generally swell guy. And he's been very nice to be in all of the Max Barkeyfield guys. You're the only person who's been in all the books. So thank you, Merlin.
Wow, like the Cal Ripken of Sparky books.
Okay, well, I'll take that.
Is that a sports reference? Thank you, David. Thank you for all you do and for helping all of us Mac nerds. We all, you're a god to us. Thank you.
Thank you.